Welcome to Better Cast Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis.
And today we're talking about season 6, episode 12. It's the second to last episode, Waterworks. Alexis, how'd you feel about this episode?
Information! Finally! We got some information. We got to see Kim again.
Yes.
So that alone makes it better than the last two episodes for me. Certainly better than the last one.
Been missing Kim.
Yeah. It's nice to, I mean, it's not nice to see her in her current state, but it is nice to see her again.
Yep.
What'd you think?
Yep. Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep.
I'm going to start off with a controversial statement about this episode, and everybody's probably going to hate me for it. Miracle Whip is actually good. Everybody who is looking at this, although I will say Miracle Whip has its place. Miracle Whip is excellent on a piece of bread.
Yeah, Miracle Whip has a place. You're right. The garbage.
I knew it.
The trash can. The dumpster.
Miracle Whip is
trash in your trash for like
on a piece of bread by itself. That's it.
What?
Have a mayonnaise sandwich. I used to do this all the time when I was a kid with Miracle Whip.
Just
that was the quote unquote mayonnaise of choice in our house.
The spread of choice. The egg spread of choice. That's disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, sure, some people might find it disgusting. I will say in potato salad and or tuna salad, it probably is disgusting because it doesn't really taste like mayonnaise.
I don't know that you... I don't know. I guess maybe potato salad, it might be okay because you have other tangy things in potato salad, right? Like you have mustard. There's mustard in potato salad. So maybe they play along well together. But yeah, keep it the fuck out of my tuna salad. Thank you very much.
Now that I've pissed everybody off, can I say I like this episode? I do. I like this episode. I was significantly more engaged by this episode than the previous two.
Yeah.
Even though those episodes were fun to watch, I felt like this had some meaning to it, some meat, something to dig into. And we got plenty of feedback, you know, both supporting our opinions of last episode and against it, that we'll get to some of that in the feedback here after we do the recap. But yeah, I feel like there was stuff that happened, but it was so slow going and they flirt with that a little bit in this episode, but then they get, but it's stuff that's like new and interesting and engaging. And I was feeling this episode.
At least we finally see what the hell Kim's been up to for 6 years.
Yeah. New information, like you said.
Yeah.
It's great stuff.
It is.
And it was a very emotional episode.
Yeah.
And like I say all the time, I'm about the character drama stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's what really does it for me in these shows. And this is a pretty character-heavy episode.
It really is. Yeah.
Including the flashbacks, you know? The flashbacks here don't just inform like a slight change of context for things. They are like really doing some heavy lifting on characters. So
they are.
Stuff is good.
They really are. Yeah. It's fun to watch. Even the second time. Ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest.
And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
So we cold open in Saul's office in color. He's dragging his feet, trying to avoid meeting with Kim to sign their divorce papers.
Mm-hmm.
He's loudly dragging his feet.
The sound of thinking.
Thump, thump, thump.
And thump, his thinking thump, collapses thump, onto thump, his desk in pillar form, yes, which I love.
It's like a metaphor for his law career, basically.
Yeah, sure.
Flimsy, taken down easily by one very small thing.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, you're right. I'm shocked that those weren't even like glued to the wall. That's wild to me.
That is wild to me, especially knowing that they're styrofoam.
Yeah. And they could just come down with a slight breeze.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that, you know, the big deal about the scene is not him bouncing this ball, but it's what it means. Right. And, mm-hmm, and he's thinking about how he's going to approach this meeting with what we find out is Kim.
Yep.
He's clearly like made time in his day to sweat about it and sweat over his appearance too. That's the thing that really gets me, is when he checks his reflection in the mirror and like, mm-hmm, smooths his hair and all that stuff. Clearly he cares what Kim thinks about him, but it comes out in the strangest way in this episode.
Comes out in the grossest way. Yeah.
Right. The most offensive asshole kind of way, but it makes a lot of sense.
It's a defense mechanism. Yeah. Right.
As is 99% of the stuff that he does.
Yeah. He's just trying to protect himself. And then in this situation, he's doing it with a shell of indifference.
Yeah.
False, yeah, indifference.
This smarmy, ugh, slick indifference. Yeah. We'll
it gets so get much worse later on. But yeah, it makes her wait at least an hour,
uh-huh,
after their agreed meeting time. Makes everybody in the office wait.
And he makes Francesca feel like an idiot. Yeah. Like, what are you waiting for? Send her in after he's made her wait for so long.
Yeah, after she called him literally 2 minutes before that, asking what the hell was taking so long. Yeah.
Yeah.
What a douche.
No, he's terrible.
He's peak douche form in this episode, I would say.
He is. Yeah. I mean, he's not, you know, actively trying to get people murdered, but, mm-hmm, it's like character murder.
Sure.
He's trying to murder the light in Kim's eyes.
He's trying to murder the light in my eyes, frankly. I wasn't expecting him to be... I don't know why. I guess I was kind of hoping that maybe that better angel of his nature, the Jimmy side, mm-hmm, would start coming out more throughout this episode. The Gene part as well, not just this now in the past.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
Yeah, there are moments of it, but...
But it is far... Far more just him being very bitter.
Mm-hmm.
We finally cut to Kim in black and white in her boring Florida life. She hosts a cookout with Miracle Whip potato salad, barf, has boring sex, has boring work conversations, and eventually takes a call from Victor St. Clair. An old friend.
Yeah, I think everybody immediately recognized that name.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is kind of the scene, like you said earlier, that I've been waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
Just catching up with Kim, seeing where she's been at for the last, apparently, 6 years.
How she's been doing, like, emotionally and just life-wise, and it looks like she's fine, basically.
Fine?
Bored, but fine.
Ooh. I would say she's the opposite of fine. I would say she has totally numbed herself in order to not deal with the things she's been... She's done the same thing Saul has. That's the truth of it. Is like, it just comes out differently, right? She's, Saul goes full on into this new persona.
Sure.
And you know, it's... He goes like down the rabbit hole of being this bombastic person. She does the exact opposite, but for the same reason.
She buries herself in mundanity.
For Jimmy, you know, who was never really had much of a conscience as a con man, didn't have a huge problem with that. What he had a problem with is losing Kim. And then Kim, who has a conscience, has a problem with the stuff they did, and it weighs on her. But she's ignoring it by just turning off any part of herself that could possibly bring up feelings.
Right.
Like, she doesn't have an opinion on anything.
All
like
of her
absolutely
shininess.
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, that's a good point.
She's gone out of her way to be as opposite to Kim Wexler, the attorney, as she possibly could. Her hair color, her choice in clothing, her choice in boyfriends. Except one interesting way, which we'll talk about here in a second when we get to her job. But yeah, she feels like she has dumbed herself down and numbed herself down to deal with all this.
That's a really insightful way to look at it.
Well, thank you.
It's more, definitely more insightful than my initial take on it.
I mean, I can talk about some non-insightful things like
why
Kim cutting veggies the way I do.
What do you mean? Slowly and...
Yeah, super slow.
Painfully.
Uh-huh. So it's not to cut yourself. Yeah. Sure. Like someone who doesn't spend a lot of time in the kitchen. Yes.
Gotcha.
She spent a lot of time eating takeout food as an attorney.
So if she
has learned any cooking in the last 6 years, it's not much.
Yeah.
Or it's more than she ever has known, I guess.
Midwestern cooking.
Yeah, I guess she's probably using recipes from her family when she was growing up. I don't know. Did her mom cook? Probably.
Maybe, probably, yeah, because you can't eat out all the time when you're poor.
No.
You just can't.
No.
You make it yourself.
Yeah, but now she's in Florida with, I think these are just Florida glasses. She's got the O-face guy from Office Space as a boyfriend, except more boring.
I just don't know why she would even waste her time with a relationship that she doesn't care about. Like, the sex is not good, I don't think.
It doesn't seem like it.
Yeah.
No, so I really don't know either. Like, what is she getting out of that?
Yeah, seems like a waste of time to me. Get a hobby. It's just a distraction.
Well, that's the thing. So she doesn't...
Just fills the time.
She doesn't have opinions on things, right? They make that super clear. She's not willing to even choose
an ice
cream flavor.
Right.
Or even give an opinion on what an ice cream flavor might be, which one might be better. So, like, she's maybe filling... She's using this dude as, like, a choice maker in her personal life. Like, otherwise she would just sit like Jean, right? And do absolutely nothing. Just sit and stare.
Yeah, she's sort of like...
into nothingness.
Riding his tailcoat in a really strange way. Like, his social tailcoat.
Even though... I don't know that he has a huge tailcoat to surf on. It's probably just like...
No, but he seems...
Any choice is better than my no choice.
Yeah, right. That's the thing. He seems just like completely normal. Mundane, but normal.
And then you look at like Saul, who in episodes past has filled his void with meaningless sex.
Yeah.
She's kind of doing the same. It's just like, you know, that mirror universe version of it. But it's like the same stuff is happening, but it's just different.
Yeah, it's just like it's just like Jean with the Cinnabon job. It's the exact same thing. Like, the color is gone from her world in the exact same way.
Yeah.
But she
does live right on
chose
the water.
It for herself, as opposed to Jean, who had to go into hiding.
Right, right. That's one thing we find out is she's using her real name.
Yeah.
She's not in hiding, which makes sense. You know, she got divorced before all the bad stuff with Walt went down. So her change of lifestyle, I find it interesting that it's not legally necessary, but is like emotionally necessary for her.
It's true. I have one more thing to say about this before we move on, and that is that her boyfriend decided to say that it looks like it was going to rain. And my dude, it rains at least every fucking morning in Florida.
Yeah.
Like every day it rains in Florida.
It's because the humidity is 140%.
Yeah. The sky just doesn't have a choice.
You effectively live in a cloud.
Basically, yeah. Hot, wet cloud.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations. More power to everybody who lives in Florida and can put up with that.
Were you connecting the yep sex stuff with the yup?
Of course I was. Five? That yup is like permanently burned into my brain.
Right.
I say it to myself around the house, like often, very
Me too.
Often.
Yeah.
It's just, it feels good. It feels good. Give it a try if you haven't done it yet, dear listener. Yup. Mm. Feels amazing.
Yep.
All right, whatever. So next, we're with Kim. Oh, shoot. No, we didn't even talk about the phone call, did we?
No, this is like the second half of this scene.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
I think some people are going to have a problem with like the first half of this scene, everything up to the phone call, because it takes a while. Like they spend a lot of time on single color puzzles and deviled eggs and boring bad sex and...
It didn't bother me, though, personally. I guess I was so hungry for Kim information that I was like, yeah, show me exactly what her daily life looks like.
Right.
I want to know what this bitch has been doing instead of being part of the story.
Yeah, I guess the only times it started to get to me is when it didn't focus on Kim, when it was like off with the receptionist or watching just some dude play solitaire. Those shots are perplexing. I don't know why the hell you need that. If it was Kim playing solitaire, sure, but just some dude... At her work? Those are weird shots, but ultimately, I felt like this stuff was very engaging for me.
I think they are really trying to establish that not only is her entire life boring, but the place that she works at is extremely boring and quiet.
It's a sprinkler system company. There's nothing
nothing flashy about that.
Or flashy happening there.
Flashiest thing is the water that comes out.
Yeah. So I guess we should talk about that. Her job is like... Like I said earlier, she's doing everything she can to distance herself from her old life, but also she's in this job, which is very much like the doc review stuff.
I was thinking that, it's HHN. Paperwork and like confirming things and making phone calls. So there's still an organizational element to it. It's just...
And the key is she doesn't need to have an opinion on any of this stuff. It's fed to her. All she does is translate it to these brochures or whatever and verify its authenticity. That's it. She doesn't have to make a single choice about it. She doesn't have to have an opinion about
She does. I think she does write the like the copy for the items in the brochure.
Okay.
But that's it. And I think we saw her starting to write something a little more interesting on one of them, and then she backspaces and writes something more boring.
Okay.
I think I'm remembering that correctly. I don't know. It was all quite dull.
Yeah.
It was hard to pay attention. But
this is the job I'm going to have when I quit podcasting.
Yeah.
A job where I do not need to have a single opinion on anything. Because I've spent the last 10 years of my life having to have
nothing
an opinion
but
on
opinions.
Everything.
Every tiny little thing.
Yeah. It can be exhausting. True. And I haven't even murdered somebody or, got somebody murdered that we know of that I'll admit to on a podcast.
I'm just giving him the silent treatment. I'm just letting him hang himself with his own rope, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Dear God.
Oh, here's the worst part.
Mm.
So she made what I think is potato salad for the cookout, right?
Yeah.
Comes up with this huge bowl of potato salad.
Yeah.
And then in this scene, when these people are talking about their ridiculous stuff around the lunch table outside, I don't even remember what it was they were talking about. What?
Oh, God, what was it? It was so boring.
Oh, it was a pacifier.
I don't know why they were talking
about
stuff,
Molly,
yeah.
but whatever. Different or drugs. Ecstasy, rather, but whatever. Anyway, yeah, while they're talking about that, she's eating a tuna salad sandwich with Miracle Whip in it. So she has made two gigantic batches of various salads.
Yeah.
All with Miracle Whip.
Yeah.
I think she's going to be a convert, Miracle Whip convert, by the end of this.
I can't wrap my mind around it. Sorry. I guess I didn't fully appreciate how anti-Miracle Whip I was until it was shoved in my face so much in this episode. And I hate it. I do hate it.
I didn't realize we had a split family here.
Have you ever seen Miracle Whip in the house?
No.
Well, if you ever want some, just let me know, because I will not buy it by choice.
Hellman's more like, hell nah, man.
There it is. I think that is the brand I get.
It is.
Of mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Because I'm a sane, normal person. Disgusting.
So how about this phone call?
How about this phone call? Boy, we got this one wrong. We did not think that he actually spoke to Kim when he made this payphone call. And he did.
Well, they played us dirty. They tricked us because they showed... They did a jump cut from him making the call and talking to someone to him getting irate.
Yeah.
And there's like a good 2 minutes of him talking to her where he's not irate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I assume like he just got immediate bad news and got pissed off, went from 0 to 10. No, he got there much slower. We just didn't see it. So they double screwed us, right? We didn't see half the conversation. We didn't hear any of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm still a little salty about that. But honestly, this does help heal that wound a little bit.
It does. At least we have the full context now.
And the payoff was worth it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ultimately.
It is really going to be worth it. There's going to be fireworks in the last episode, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of chickens coming home to roost.
Yeah, I do wonder if it will involve Kim in any way. I feel like they did quite a bit with Kim this episode, and I don't know what else there is to do in the final episode. But
yeah, I don't know.
And how does that intersect with him, with Gene, like being on the run?
Right.
Is he going to try and run to Kim? That would be insane.
That would be insane. As though she would take him back.
Right, especially now. My God.
I wonder if part of why he got so angry at the end of this phone call is because he guessed that she was going to put on her hair shirt and confess to everything.
Could be. It could just be that he doesn't like someone else feeling guilty when he's trying not to feel guilty. You know, it's like she clearly, I don't know, she's not like actively feeling guilty, but the way she's conversing with him here, you can tell like there is a lot of guilt inside her that she's not acknowledging. I think Jimmy picks up on that because of just like how off-put she is by talking to him.
How off-put she is, yeah. The fact that she just can't speak to him normally because he is basically, he's like a dirty secret that she has been trying to bury.
Yeah.
And now he's shown up again like he does.
And she can't go back to that, right? But it's also, you know, it's got to be kind of good to hear his voice a little bit, but also for what?
Yeah.
For what? Why did you call? You know, what do you
right.
want?
Exactly. Yeah. What could you possibly want? And if it's just to poke me and get a reaction out of me because you're feeling a certain way about something, that sucks.
Yeah.
Sucks. I do believe that she was telling the truth at the end of the call when she says, I'm happy that you're alive.
Uh-huh. But it's also a way to end that call basically saying, okay, we have no reason to ever speak again.
Yeah, this is all we have.
You've gotten what you wanted. Yeah. Like, you called to see if I was still alive or to let me know that you're still alive. Well, I know now, so goodbye.
Yeah.
Forever.
I wonder if he was harboring some hope that she would be a little warmer to him based on the fact that Francesca told him that she had called and asked about him. Yeah.
Yeah, foolish. I mean, what's he going to do? Like, meet her clandestine in the
right
in the
this
desert
prior associate of his. Yeah. Who had definitely knew where he was.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. It doesn't make any sense to make this phone call, which it doesn't matter, right? Because, you know, it doesn't have to make sense. It's just something that Gene, Jimmy, Saul, whatever, wanted to do.
Yeah, no, it was a total... He's been shooting from the hip a lot in the previous episode and in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Just this whole situation. And it makes it so much more understandable why he's so sloppy in this break-in later on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he got a fresh dose of Kim breaking up with him.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, yeah. He just, like, he picked a scab off. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't have done that. Don't ever do that. Let things heal. Ugh. Well, that was that. You want to move on to Kim at the airport?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, next we're with Kim at the airport, waiting for a shuttle in Albuquerque, of all places. She goes by the courthouse and then Cheryl Hamlin's house, where we learn Kim has written out a detailed confession.
Yeah, and left it with the DA.
And left it with the DA, and then left it with Cheryl.
You think the DA is Linda?
Still.
What's her name?
Yeah, I don't know why it wouldn't be.
Probably. Who knows? It's like yeah.
She hated her job.
This is a big scene, and it leads to an even bigger scene after it.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised to see her going back to the courthouse. Mm-hmm. Like, what possible purpose could that have? But ultimately, we find out.
Yeah. At first, I thought it was like a weird little, like, emotional tour of duty for a second, like, reminding herself the things that she had, mm-hmm. the things that she left, but that doesn't make any sense for Kim. Of course, she was actually doing something.
Right.
I feel like her doing this whole scene, it might be her being the truest that she has been to herself in 6 years.
100%. Hence,
and I think that's why she is having as strong of an emotional reaction in the bus later on or in the shuttle.
Absolutely.
As she does.
Yeah.
Because it's the right thing to do. Cheryl asks her, why are you doing this at the end? And she doesn't answer, but we know the answer. It's because Kim is basically a good person.
Yeah.
And it's the right thing to do. So she does it.
Yeah, she's felt guilty ever since. Yeah. And I think, like, Jimmy calling up
and being a dick
and picking that scab has, you know, freshened it. And now she can't ignore it anymore.
Just reinforced the need to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Good for her.
And she does get a bit of a memory tour here, you know, going to the elevator. She sees someone, a public defender, working with a client, straightening their tie. You know, she's got a ponytail, she's got the business suit, all the she looks like, you know, a mirror
baby
image
Kim.
Of Kim,
right?
And she thinks about, you know, her past life, the life she could have had, the life that she wanted, and how it's turned out because of the decisions she's made. And I think that also contributes to the very strong reaction she has later.
Absolutely. I was kind of impressed. I mean, obviously these characters are not real, but I was still impressed at Cheryl's level-headedness throughout that part of the scene. Because I don't know that I would have been able to not react more strongly if I were presented with the same kind of thing, like, oh, that all that, it was a lie, and also I orchestrated it, and you kind of knew, but I convinced you otherwise, basically.
Yeah.
I convinced you that you didn't know your husband as well as you thought you did.
No, it was super dark when it happened. It's just as dark now.
Yeah. It's rough. So good on her for not freaking out.
Yeah, I mean, she's trying to do the right thing here, give her closure, I guess.
Some kind of closure, at least.
Not easy.
Yeah.
The one other thing that I noticed when Kim was going to the courthouse is that Mike has been replaced with an automated kiosk, which was pretty good.
The booth is still there
for
some reason, but yeah, just kiosks.
Mm-hmm.
That was a nice touch.
Why not?
The automation.
I mean, you thought Mike was a tough customer if you didn't have the proper number of stickers?
Sure.
Yeah, just wait until you try and put one too few stickers into the kiosk.
Can't bully a machine.
Nope.
That's science.
Can't plead with it. You can't bribe it.
You can't. Nope.
Not getting out.
So after she talks to Cheryl. She gets on the shuttle to the airport, and that was her whole business in Albuquerque, was mm-hmm. dropping off this confession. And she is distraught, but I think relieved at the same time.
Yeah.
Because she knows that she's doing the right thing, even though there's a very good chance that it's going to blow up her shitty little Florida life.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it will.
Yeah.
To one degree or another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the thing that struck me is that she has finally stopped trying to ignore what she did.
Yeah.
And she is just processing it all at once. So that's the flood of emotions, right? It's like,
yep.
I was so terrible. I blew up not only my life, but the lives of so many people around me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all the things that like caused her, that she was acknowledging and caused her to break up with Jimmy. But she has since stuffed into a compartment inside herself and
yeah.
not looked at them. And now that she, you know, like you said, peeled that scab with Jimmy calling, she can't ignore it anymore.
And she can, I mean, assuming that she doesn't like get killed or thrown into prison or whatever, she can heal from this and move on
mm-hmm.
now because she has done everything that she can.
And I think that's why she tells Jimmy to turn himself in
yeah.
on the phone, because she knows that A, they need to pay for their sins mm-hmm. in some way, and B, he can move past it eventually.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, he didn't actually murder anybody.
Mm-hmm.
In that timeline, yeah, in the Walt timeline, he has. Or at least, he hasn't directly murdered people, but he's a conspirator.
He's an accessory, for sure. Yeah.
Never mind. He might be in jail for life. I don't know. But anyway, he can get like some glimmer of hope for being happy, right? Because he can't live with this. I think that's the thing that she has learned in this moment. You can't just live with this.
Yeah. It's always in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
And it's controlling what you do. It's making you hide yourself because
mm-hmm.
you don't want to be found.
Yeah. No, it's no good. It's ruining both of their lives, frankly. Like, Jean's not happy. She's right about that, too.
Absolutely.
That life he's living is not much.
No. Arguably, it's worse than hers. Because at least she has friends, sort of. Not very good friends, but, you know, half friends. Friendly associates.
Sure.
And Jean has nothing. Jean mm-hmm. has his Cinnabon workers. That's it.
And I got to say, one last time, probably for this series, Racy Horn is so good. Like, yes. This scene is
she's amazing.
Incredible.
She's amazing throughout this entire episode, but the scene especially, she really sells
mm-hmm.
someone coming to terms with a lot of things at once.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. Extremely affecting.
Mm-hmm.
Good job. So after this, we are back with Jean breaking into the sleeping Cancer Mark's house. I'm calling him Cancer Mark, by the way.
Cancer Mark? Okay.
Cancer Mark.
Is his name Mark and he has cancer, or is he a Mark
he's
that
a Mark.
Has cancer?
Okay. It could be Mark. I don't know.
I don't know, actually.
I don't remember. Jean takes a sweet time, narrowly avoiding getting caught, but Cabby Jeff is not so lucky.
Oh, my God.
Cabby Jeff. Oh, my God. This dunce.
Why would you peel out? I mean, even if you think the cops are on to you, why run? Why run like this? They're going to catch you.
Yeah, also, you're speeding in a neighborhood, so you're just giving them a reason to catch you
right.
immediately.
Yeah, even if they weren't onto you, well, now they can be.
Right, now they have a reason. Now they have cause.
Also, for a guy who drives for a living, he drives pretty shitty.
He does
He's
drive
pretty
shitty
at it.
Although, to be fair, I don't know. Peeling out on ice is just never, I don't know that anybody can control that once it starts going.
No, but.
But also we should have done it in the first place.
On.
Friggin' idiot.
What are you doing? Anyway, yeah, I shouted, you idiot.
We both did.
While we were watching this. Yes. I knew bad things were going to happen.
Of course, because the cops didn't give two shits about him until he literally rammed himself into another car.
Yeah.
And then there was a bunch of ruckus, so of course that wakes up a dude who's half asleep on the stairs in his house.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to find glass and all kinds of shit.
Oh, yeah. No, I want to talk a little bit more about the Jeffy and the cops stuff here before we get back to Gene.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because the Gene stuff is interesting.
Yeah.
But this is the second time recently, I think, that I've heard people talk about, oh, you're 1,400 miles away from the ocean and you ordered fish, huh? Well, you're a fucking idiot. And it's the best comeback I've heard yet. It comes from this cop. He's like, I live in the 21st fucking century.
Yeah.
Have you heard of freezing things? Have you heard of, have you eaten a potato chip, motherfucker? Because that is about as far from a potato as you could possibly get.
Yeah.
So unless you've never had a Pringle, shut your fucking mouth. Go. Oh, I hate people who say that shit. Look, I've had, I have had sushi on both coasts, and I've had sushi in the Midwest. It's damn near the same.
Yeah.
It's basically the same thing.
It's basically the same thing. Also, like,
unless you like the taste pineapple of salt water, sure.
Pineapple. It's not grown in this country, I don't think.
Fair, yeah.
Then you've had pineapple from, like, overseas. It's, yeah, it's stupid. What a stupid thing to, that's just a...
Yeah. If you know someone who ever says this to you, you need to slap them right in the face and say, we live in a society.
We live in a modern society. We, all of us. Get your shit together.
It might have even been this show where they've done it before. I don't know. But yeah. I've heard it recently twice now.
That's super annoying. Also, all this cop wants is for you to commiserate with him. That's all he wants. That's all he actually wants. He can say whatever stupid shit, but he just wants you to be like, yeah, that is kind of fucked up.
Yeah,
sorry,
man. That sucks.
Sorry you didn't get more fish in your fish taco.
Yeah. Next time we'll go to the other place. Next time we'll drive to the fucking coast. How about that?
I will take you. I will take you. On our next leave.
our next break.
Terrible. So how about fucking Gene?
Mm-hmm.
Period. But also leaving the humidor open. What is the point?
He's just a bastard when you do that.
He's just a bastard.
Like, nobody can enjoy those cigars now.
Yeah, great. Good job.
Yeah.
What a terrible person. He makes a lot of weird choices.
Joke's on him for buying cigars that don't come, and not living in Cuba, I guess.
I guess.
We're 3,000 miles from Cuba and you're buying cigars, you dipshit. Sorry.
10,000 miles from Italy and you're buying a watch, dipshit.
No, I love this stuff. It's character development inside of a heist scene, right? Like, this is the stuff that I like that I think was missing from a lot of the last couple of heists.
Yeah.
Like, I got everything I needed to know about the character development that was happening from those previous heists in about 14 seconds.
Yeah.
And then it took another 40 minutes of heist for them to complete the scenario. In this, I'm actively learning the entire time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm learning, how far is Gene willing to go to get out of this situation? Mm-hmm. Is he willing to take a man's dead dog's ashes and explode them on this man's head?
A man to death with the ashes of his own dead dog.
A man with cancer.
Yeah.
We found out last episode.
Death is maybe
exaggeration.
But at least I did knock a man out.
I got to say, when he picked that thing up, I'm like, this is a terrible, horrible thing to do when you are a piece of shit. But I would love to see an explosion of ashes. In slow motion, preferably.
Yeah. That was
close
definitely
up,
the show
motion
that would pull that off.
Yeah.
Darn. Too bad we missed it.
I would love to see that. But you know what I mean. I'm learning, how far will he go?
Yeah.
Is he willing to stoop that low?
Mm-hmm.
But also I'm learning, oh, he just doesn't care if he gets caught anymore. Like, this is the end for him and he knows it. Whether it's this heist that he gets caught in or whether it's the next one or the one after that, he is going to keep pushing the envelope until he gets caught.
Is it that, or do you think he actually thinks he's bulletproof because he's in?
I don't think so.
The middle of nowhere.
I think he's in full, like, well, Kim is gone forever. I think there was a slight bit of hope in him somehow over the last 6 years, but, you know, picking that scab off,
right?
It didn't go as well for him as it did for Kim, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, he's just gone completely off the edge.
Well, to be fair, it is because he is the one who has the most to be guilty about, I think.
Yeah.
Overall. I know Kim instigated the Howard thing.
The Howard thing, right.
Jimmy didn't try very hard to talk her out of it either.
No, and look at how many times Kim tried to push him in a different direction, right?
Yeah, before that.
Squat cobbler stuff. I never want to hear about this. Don't do this again. Like, this is illegal.
Yeah, right? Falsifying evidence.
Going out to the desert. She begged him, like, please don't go do this
thing. I don't want
thing.
You to do this.
And he said, it'll be fine. I'm going to go do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, saying, oh, she pushed him into the Howard thing, sure. But come on, like, how many times did he make the choice to go down that bad choice road?
Bit of a push for a push. Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So he definitely deserves, you know, whatever he gets here.
yeah. Sadly.
I like the brief, like, silhouette that we see of him as he's breaking in on the wall. You see the sort of bar looking motif here.
Definitely.
Through the window, and he's like behind the bars, so is this foreshadowing? Who knows? But yeah, it is a weird thing, right? Like, I see him, okay, he smokes a cigar, whatever, he taps a note on the piano, and I'm like, well, he could probably get away with that. He's just like playing around because he knows this guy's passed out. But then he goes to the front door to leave, and he goes, you know what? Nah, I'm going back in.
I'm going to see what he has upstairs, because I don't know why. Because he wants to, I guess.
Yeah.
What's good for stealing up there?
Right?
Petty theft.
There's a lot of interesting stuff in here, so I don't know, these rotating watches or whatever. I guess a neat display.
Yeah.
And the cigars, whatever. The home theater system, I think, is what it is. He's got like this big rack of equipment, glowing lighted equipment, like an AV rack in the loft. And I'm like, well, I don't see any home theater system. The TV he has up there and the sound system is not impressive enough for that to be a home theater. So maybe it's like a smart home system, but there are no alarms that go off.
Right.
I saw his thermostat. It doesn't look very, it looks pretty pedestrian to be automated.
Yeah. Right.
I couldn't really get a good grip on what that was supposed to be. But
me either. I just kind of, I was with you. I just assumed it was AV equipment. Maybe there's a record player on top connected to speakers somewhere.
Yeah, it could be a like an in-home speaker system if he's like playing piano and he has people over and playing music and singing. I don't know. Maybe. He does like the piano, apparently. The other thing I noticed is this collection, this line of hats.
Yeah.
I was wondering if that's like to cover his head from like chemo treatments because he had lost his hair or something, because they're very prominently featured.
Yeah. Or maybe it's just a fancy lad.
Or maybe hats. Sure.
At least three fancy watches, four if you count the one he's wearing, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I don't know. I think he just has good taste.
Okay.
Or expensive taste, at least.
Yeah.
But he's not super ostentatious with it like some of the other houses they broke into.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. I went back and I watched the scene between him and Gene when they met in the bar. And that scene is really good. It's one of the scenes I liked the most the first time through, but then this time it made even more sense to me, because he's talking about, like, you know, there are some people who are in the business and who are honest and truthful, and like there's a certain place in hell for the people like the Enrons and the WorldComs and Bernie Madoff, the con men. And he's talking to him. I can't even remember picking up on that in the first time through that, or second time through that even.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I was seeing what that relationship was like. And he's such a nice guy. He seems genuinely nice.
Yeah, at least real. He seems like a real person who can see other people.
Yeah.
Unlike a lot of those other guys that they were conning.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the first one. Especially Buzz.
Yeah, right?
Screw that guy.
So it makes it even worse that he's back here just messing with this guy's stuff.
Yeah, at least he's alive. I was
half
convinced that this man was going to be dead on the floor when Gene walked in. But he was snoring, so they immediately arrested my worries there.
Yeah.
Gene starts to go out the front door, and then he sees there's a cop just hanging out, and he bails on that idea. And shortly afterward is when Jeffy peels off like an idiot and crashes his car. So I guess he just went out the back door.
Yeah. He takes a bus home, right?
He does, yeah. Using the distraction.
I think they're mirroring a little bit here, Kim and Jimmy.
Definitely.
With, you know, Kim taking the airport shuttle and Jimmy taking the bus and Kim, you know, breaking down and sobbing and Jimmy just doubling down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good parallel. And that's the end of that scene. So after this, we're going to cut back to Kim and Saul signing their divorce papers in the past. Saul's a dick about it the whole time, of course. Mm-hmm. And eventually Kim leaves and shares her cigarettes with a familiar face outside.
Yeah, I kept wishing this entire scene that this column would fall over on him.
Yeah.
Just to show, like, while he's talking to Kim, like, how stupid this whole facade is. Like,
stupid and flimsy.
Right. Yeah. Like, you are as flimsy as this stupid column mm-hmm. in this stupid room in this stupid law office. Like,
yeah.
Everyone sees through it. Jesse sees through it. My God, yeah. He's the stupidest of all characters. He sees right through it.
He's not
with the exception
stupidest.
Of maybe Badger.
Badger's the stupidest of all characters, man.
Yeah.
Jesse's actually pretty smart. He's just, nobody ever gives him a chance.
Right.
That's the thing.
But you take my meaning, like, falling over, and I cannot believe they didn't do it, because I thought it would be hilarious, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can have your moment where you're like, God, he's being such a dick.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, maybe as, you know, she's walking out or something, it falls over on him and she's like, might want to get that fixed. Or
I'm
something.
Sure, yeah, you know, just, I'm sure they just didn't want to ruin the emotional impact of the moment of her just, like, basically saying without saying, all right, well, this is what you're doing, apparently, so I'm going to leave. Because that's all I can
then
do.
Then you could have had
moment.
Him just, like, break the column, be pissed off, all right, right? That, like,
yeah,
it didn't work. He knows that Kim knows that he's full of shit.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it would have been amazing, but
it would have been pretty funny.
The scene as is very good as well. Like, that emotional note of, like,
yeah,
just being the biggest douchebag about this whole scenario.
And everybody, like you said, everybody knows in this moment that it is a facade.
Mm-hmm.
But he's making the choice to put on this facade. So even if it is fake, you're still a dick for trying to do it.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel, you know, bad for Kim.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like she didn't want it to end this way,
no.
But he's making it in that way. And she does the right thing here. Don't say anything. Just,
yeah.
You know, if this is how he's going to be, just let him be that way and walk out.
He's just trying to get a rise out of you, mm-hmm. basically. Yeah, it's that kind of person. And she took the upper road, took the higher road.
But she did not take her sandpiper money, which I found interesting. Everybody was wondering, like, where, you know, where does Jimmy get all this money for the house and the women and the breakfast bar?
I was kind of thinking after what happened with Howard that she wouldn't want anything to do with it.
Yeah, it made sense.
Yeah. That is a very Kim choice. I mean, what would she even do with it, really?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing in good conscience.
Yeah.
Which is why you
I mean, it would just be a constant reminder, right? She'd look at her mm-hmm. bank statement and go, oh, yeah, I got this from killing my boss.
Right. Defaming and then killing my boss, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah, destroying my boss's reputation for good.
For the rest of forever. Yeah, terrible. We see... after this very emotional signing with poor Francesca having to kind of be in the middle of these two people who she's known forever. She's known them since the innocent days, basically, mm-hmm. when they were just trying to make it work together in a shared office independently. Yeah. That's when they brought her on. And now here we are. And she gives Kim a look that says, it is what it is.
Yeah, right. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's terrible. And Saul calls in his next client, which is Emilio. And if you don't know who Emilio mm-hmm. is, that is Jesse's cooking partner in the beginning of Breaking Bad. The one who goes to prison.
Right. And then gets out and is over at Crazy 8's house. And
yep.
Like, yep.
Yep.
Bad scene.
Yep. Bad. His future is not bright. Not bright at all.
Let's be honest, though, half of Saul's clients don't do paperwork. Like, that's not a strange occurrence.
Yeah. And they're... Unless it was to get a license, they have done no paperwork whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I was being a little... I was being coy about it, but it's Jesse outside.
Yes.
Wanting to bum a smoke. And there is... I thought a sweet and kind of funny parallel here between these two, because Jimmy starting out in some ways I think is very similar to when Jesse was starting out, the innocence, or not the innocence, but the still had hope, I guess. Wasn't completely broken as a person, and they're sharing a, not sharing a cigarette, but you know, basically sharing a cigarette, just like Kim and Jimmy used to.
Yes.
In the parking garage at HHM. Yeah,
for sure.
Sad. I love Jesse just doing his Jesse stuff. Also, I'm always happy to get a little bit more of that. Even if it's a little fan service, I don't give a shit. Give me more Jesse.
No, I didn't mind this scene. Mostly for the, like, and the usually when you say crossing the threshold, you're talking about a moment of inspiration for a character, or a moment like a positive moment for a character. This is the opposite, right? This is like she's walking from Kim Wexler, the attorney with blonde hair and matching skirt and blazer, to Kim Wexler, the Floridian who, I don't know, makes Miracle Whip sandwiches
and does not wear the earrings anymore.
Yes. Yeah, she's taking the spiky earrings out. And there's this like sheet of water that feels like a barrier that she's passing through, right? Like something definitive.
It's like a portal to her moist future in Florida.
Yeah. That and just like the down nature, the downbeat nature of everything, right? Like it's just constant raining on her parade. Rainy days, you know, the feeling of a rainy day. Everybody knows it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like shitty outside and you don't want to do anything.
Yeah, just gray. Makes your mood gray.
Yeah. It feels like she's been in that gray zone, like literally throughout the show or throughout this episode until now, for 6 years. So.
Yeah. And that, yeah, and this is the beginning of that.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good framing of the moment and of the future. Could Jesse afford a Versace hoodie that early on? Seems kind of...
Is that what he's wearing?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that pattern is like deeply Versace-esque.
Huh, okay.
Somebody tell me if I'm wrong.
I don't know. I mean, he's cooking meth, right? He could probably afford something. Look at his car. He's clearly done some work on his car.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Maybe this is like the one nice hoodie he has.
Yeah.
And the rest are... he's got a lot of... I wouldn't call them nice.
Let's just say I don't think he's putting a lot of money into an IRA or anything. Like, he's probably spending basically every cent he makes.
Sure.
As soon as he makes it.
That's
so
fair.
Yeah. A $1,300 hoodie. Sure. Why not?
Yeah, that's a fair point. I don't know why I'm acting like drug dealers don't buy nice clothes and cars. Like, what?
Yeah.
You've seen Breaking Bad, right? Yes, I have. Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
They buy burgundy shirts and pork pie hats.
Yes, burgundy shirts. Ugh. Oh, Walter White, you suck.
Why the order of these scenes? It's a question I was asking myself when I saw this scene, which both happens before her breakdown on the bus and her call with Jean, but might have made those moments even more poignant if we saw what a douche Saul was to her in the end. Is there something I'm missing here that makes like the order of these scenes particularly important?
It must be kind of just a slow unveiling of information, because if you had them smushed together in chronological order, it might not have that same impact.
There wouldn't be any question
in your mind, and they like to make you think the entire time.
They might have told you too much how to feel about Jimmy.
Exactly.
And the phone call.
Yep.
That makes sense.
So then by the time we get back to the final scene, and the way he's acting, yeah, I guess it makes more sense.
Yeah. And this final line
from her.
It's
more believable.
When she's talking to Jesse,
yes.
You know, he asked, was he any good? Mm-hmm. Or is he any good? And she says, when I knew him, he was, which, you know, this guy that she just met with, she doesn't even recognize him.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't recognize who he's pretending to be. So,
yep.
Yeah, that's not Jimmy in there. That's a bitter, broken person.
It's all good, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's all good, man. Sad, sad, sad. So for the final scene, we are back with Gene as he takes a bus home, like we mentioned before. Jeffy calls from the police station, and Gene says he'll get Marion to post bail. But when he comes by to pick her up, she's figured out who he used to be and sicks the cops on him, and mm-hmm. he runs away. Literally.
Yeah, literally. First thing I noticed in this scene is when he gets home, he's drinking straight scotch this time. No Rusty Nail. He doesn't bother to put the Drambuie or the lemon juice in it. It's just straight scotch.
And he seems like he's feeling pretty good about himself and things.
The magic fingers.
Singing on the way home. Singing is the word I'll use for it. Even though I don't know that's
just like
Bob
Odenkirk has ever sang in this show. Yeah.
Yeah. Consistent. It's nothing if not consistent.
Yeah, he's found some place where he really thinks, like, he might be right. He might just think he's invincible.
Because he's so smart, right? Because he's run so many successful cons.
Because him singing really, really threw me, right? Like, he's happiest when he's gaming the system.
Yeah, when he's getting away with it. When he's behind the curtain, making things move, and people don't even realize it. Right.
Am I going to have to take these scenes, these Gene scenes, and just recontextualize everything I thought about him and Chuck's relationship? Like, maybe Chuck wasn't. Maybe I shouldn't be on Team Fuck Chuck. Maybe Jimmy was always an asshole, and Chuck was just reacting to him being an asshole.
I think he was an asshole in the way that Jesse was an asshole, which is to say, has the emotional armor on immediately in any scenario, and it makes him do things that are worse than maybe his character would suggest.
Yeah, the way I read it is always like Chuck was angry because Jimmy got the kid gloves from his parents. Like, he was the kid that was loved more, right? Or given more attention, not necessarily even loved more, just like they focused their attention on Jimmy.
Well, of course they did, because he was loud. That's
right.
It.
Right, but I read that as, like, Chuck was just bitter about that. And so, you know, when Jimmy made a mistake, he would never let it die. He would never forgive him. And I think that's true, but, you know, maybe
I mean, he was right about slipping Jimmy being a thing, for sure, but also he was a dick about it.
Sure.
And he was... If he had only been a dick in those situations dealing with those things, it would be different. But he was a dick even when Jimmy was trying to make something of himself, too.
Yeah.
He didn't let him make something of himself and thus made himself an enemy.
Yeah. I mean, that's why those first few seasons are so good.
Yeah.
With Michael McKean, because
so good.
It's so complex. Like, there isn't a perfect right answer. There's... Mm-hmm. There are multiple answers depending on which side you're viewing it from, and all of them make sense. And now I'm finding there's a third option here where maybe Jimmy was always a shit and deserved to be punished, and Chuck was just doing the punishment that his parents wouldn't do.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe.
But look where it led him.
Look where it led him.
Nowhere good.
Nope, not for either of them. So, Gene, menacing... poor Marion at the end of this episode. That was not surprising, but maybe a little surprising. I don't know how to explain that. It's not something I expected, but then when it happened, I wasn't that surprised.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was not expecting it either.
He's usually not, like, physically aggressive with people is the thing. He uses his words to hurt.
Right.
But in this scenario, I mean, he's it maybe was just an intimidation tactic, but still, he is like, he has that phone cord wrapped around his hands, and he is getting close to, again, this lady who, although she is very self-possessed and smart, she's still, you know, an old woman.
Yeah, she's frail. She's got a walker. She can't move around.
Exactly. She has an electric scooter.
And I think that's why he is able to pull this off. I think, like, A, he's changed, right? I think this nail in the coffin of him and Kim has driven him to an even darker place. And I think if this were somebody else who he didn't think he could physically intimidate, he wouldn't even have tried this.
Sure.
But I mean, he's doing a shade of this with Jeff as well. There isn't like a physical intimidation, but there is a mental intimidation going on. And it's not his go-to move. Like, he doesn't intimidate people. What he does
usually
is
he gets
dangles, their confidence, right?
Yeah, he dangles what they want in front of him.
Earns
and
their
says,
trust.
Yeah, and this is what you're going to do for me.
And that's the other thing about this scene is that option for him has been taken totally off the table.
Mm-hmm.
Once, like, people might suspect, oh, you're a con man, whatever, you're playing me. What? But he can always come up with an excuse, right, to get them back in on the con. With this, she's seen the visual evidence of who he is.
Mm-hmm.
He tries one round of that. You think that's me? That's not me. And she's like, bullshit.
Right.
And then now he's lost, right? He doesn't, he can't go to his usual bag of tricks. So he's resorting to the physical intimidation.
And it doesn't work.
And I'm glad it doesn't work, right?
Yeah,
like,
me too.
I think, like, A, the cops needed to be called on him, but B, I'm glad he backs down.
Yeah.
That's the thing. And this wouldn't have felt true. We've talked, you know, just last episode about the difference between Jimmy and Walt as, like, anti-heroes or villains, whatever you want to call them.
Right.
And I talked a little bit about, like, the choice that Walt made time and time again to be that bad person and the mistakes that led Jimmy down a road to being bad and the fundamental difference that I saw between those things.
Right.
And if he had made the decision here to, like, kill this woman,
that's
all off the table. Like, now you're just Walter White by another name.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that would have been the move if it had been Walter White.
Oh, yeah. 100% Walt comes up and
especially in game, Walter White.
Oh, yeah. And then her body goes in a barrel of acid and then she's off to the desert and buried and, like, yeah. No, Walt doesn't hesitate in that moment. He doesn't feel anything about it either.
He's
just like, yep, that's another person I had to kill. Too bad.
Yeah.
Got in my way.
Scary. Real sociopath.
So they do salvage Jimmy's character in this scene, too. That's the thing that I like about it, is it's not just telling you how far Gene is willing to go, but it's telling you how far he won't go.
Yeah. I'm glad.
And it's salvaging some little bit of the character we used to love so much.
Yeah, it almost feels like it's not a ploy for sympathy, but it's like, remember, he isn't completely terrible.
Yeah.
So you feel maybe like 5% bad for him for what happens to him in the next episode, the end of this huge story that we've been showing you. Oh my God, this next episode, I can't.
No, I'm super excited.
I'm super excited too.
I mean,
too,
what now
I'm
for
nervous.
Him?
Yeah.
Right? Like you said, at the end of the episode, he literally runs away from this scene as the cops are not approaching. They're not, like, close yet, but they're coming.
Yeah. They know that Saul Goodman, this person, this wanted man.
She knows his fake name. She can say Gene Takovic, and they can be like, all right, let's go to his house.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess is he runs to his house.
He gets
his jewels.
And
he gets his
Saul box.
His Better Call Saul tapes. And gets his scotch, and he just runs.
Yeah.
Again.
I guess so. I don't. And where is he going to run to? Boy, would be amazing and terrible if he ran to Florida.
Oh my God.
But if he thinks that he has lost everything, right? If he literally has nothing left to lose.
Yeah.
Where would this man go? And we know that he's still.
Maybe Florida.
He's angry at Kim for sure. He's angry.
And then Kim turns him in? That could be a fitting end to
it
that.
It could be a fitting
honestly.
End. She already sort of turned herself in.
Yeah, she turned herself in. She's gotten
bare minimum
as clear of a conscience as she's going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And now for him to come back and try and pull her back into it, she's got to say no to that.
I don't even know if it's going to be that so much as, like, he wants to see her one more time. He wants to just be in her presence, because that was the last time. His time with her was the last good time that he had in his life.
Yeah, totally.
Like, legit good time. Yeah, sure, he had lots of money and sex workers and stuff when he was Saul Goodman, but yeah, it's not the same.
Not a quote-unquote good time.
Yeah, no, it's not that emotional connection that he had with her.
Right.
And she was also one of the few people who thought that he was worth anything.
Mm-hmm.
She tried so hard to help him feel like he was worth something. But at the end,
go back to that with Chuck, too. Yeah. Did Chuck try? Chuck, I think, tried.
I don't know that he did. I don't know that he tried in that way.
He tried in his own way, which wasn't always healthy or useful.
Vaguely emotionally abusive, yeah.
Sure.
Which just rubbed him the wrong way every time. And you have to see that your approach is not working and then adjust your approach if you're not a douchebag.
Yeah.
Right? But he never was willing to do that.
No. And you're right, Kim. Kim stuck with him far longer than I expected her to, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, she gave him all the chances in the world to turn this around. And now that she has gotten to a place where she can at least process her guilt, him showing up would just be ridiculous. It would be devastating.
It would be. Which is why I am numbering it among the possibilities. Because also, I can't think of anywhere else that he would run to.
Well, okay, let's talk about the final scene here, like the teaser for next week.
Oh, yeah. They've been doing all season.
It's just the esteem. What is it? A Ford? I don't even remember.
His old shitty car that he lost in the desert, and it's still in the desert. Seems like it's still on its side in a ditch, and it is rusted over. So we know this is not. Not in the past, at least not that far in the past.
Yeah, I suppose maybe it could be like Breaking Bad.
It could be divorce papers era. Maybe.
Maybe that's pretty early for it to be this rusty.
Yeah. Also, was it in black and white? I don't remember.
I don't think it might have been both. It might have been it might have transitioned from black and white to color.
Shit, I wish I could remember. I only saw it once is the thing. I think we skipped the teaser the first time we watched the episode.
Yeah, because Amazon does that thing where, like, we're gonna play another thing in 2 seconds if you don't hit the button.
Acknowledge that you're alive.
Yeah. So I don't know how that's gonna play in. Like, how could it possibly play in unless we do a memory tour next week and it's it's a big.
Next episode is just a montage. Yeah. It's nothing but a montage. And they did it specifically for you because you complain about the montages so often. You go, fucko.
It would be a fitting way for this series to end with just a full episode montage. And I don't know that I've ever seen anyone do a full episode montage. I've seen a one-er. I've seen a full episode single shot one camera thing.
Yeah, me too.
But I've never seen a full episode montage, so maybe.
Oh, God.
And you're right, I would hate that.
I would hate it, too. That would not be satisfying. But yeah, I am so curious. Is this just like, is this evidence? That's the other thing, too. We don't know how far back Kim went with her affidavit, her confession.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was like the entire length of their conning together. I don't know how much of the cartel's stuff that she is admitting to.
And it could be more than we saw in the letter that she gave to Cheryl.
Right.
Because she gave a copy of something to the DA, which could be more, you know?
Yeah.
And she just gave Cheryl the stuff that pertained to Howard. I don't know.
I don't know either, but I guess if she is going to talk about Lalo, she probably has to go back to the beginning, which would involve Jimmy in the desert. That is the beginning of the Lalo stuff.
Yeah.
And even before that was Nacho. I don't know how much of that she actually knows about, but bare minimum, she knows about the desert.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So that could be why we're seeing the esteem again. But who knows? I don't know. Maybe it is a montage. I'll fucking hate it if that's the case. But
no, I'm sure it won't be. I'm sure they've got something big planned for the final episode. We got to get final predictions in, though. Do you think Gene / Saul / Jimmy lives? Do you think he goes to prison? Do you think he gets away scot-free? Whether that's, you know, a miserable life or whether that's living in Barbados or something. Belize, maybe he's going. He legitimately, literally goes to Belize.
Literally goes to Belize.
Because that's the other thing about that teaser is he is trying to call the vacuum repair guy again.
Yeah.
And of course, Robert Forster died at some point.
The person,
In the recent past. So that actor won't be around to play them. I assume the disappearer wouldn't even take his call, like after the last, wasn't it two times he called him?
Yeah, I don't think you can double and triple dip, can you?
I mean, he talked about how expensive it was going to be last time. Yeah. So maybe he can give him these jewels and...
Oh, that's right. I forgot that he did call him in the Gene timeline. Mm-hmm. Gosh, how long ago
And then
was
said,
that?
Cancel that.
Yeah. That was last season, wasn't it?
I think so. It was very recent.
I think it was like the end of the last season, wasn't it? When he was like, I'm going to take care of it myself, like you just said.
Yes, because Jeff was following him.
Yep. Okay, so he does still have access, but yeah, maybe dude's just like, I can't with this guy. I can't with this guy.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so.
Especially, I don't know if the cops are already
looking
for him.
He's too hot, right?
He's like, super hot again.
This is the second time that he's been on the radar of the cops. It's going to be even harder to hide him. I don't think he'll want anything to do with him.
Liability. Huge liability. Mm-hmm. It's like a trace back. I mean, how did he get a new identity in the first place, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if he can hide twice.
So I don't think he gets away scot-free. That said, I don't know if he does die, maybe be like accidental or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Can you see him going to prison? What do you think?
Yeah, I could see him going to prison. It feels like the most fitting thing.
It would be the most fitting thing.
Especially when, like, a lot of this starts because of the Chicago sunroof, right? Like, that's where, like, this whole cycle really started up again. Because I felt like he was out of Chuck's life, just off doing his own con thing for a while until he got caught for the Chicago sunroof.
You know what happened? Oh, shit. I just made this connection. The Chicago sunroof also happened because of a woman.
It was
his previous wife. Yeah.
Oh,
so he got upset about that, and they did a stupid thing that got him booked. And here he is doing that same shit again.
Thing, yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, he falls into patterns.
Oh my god.
He's
don't we all
experienced no character growth in this entire series?
Poor guy.
Which I don't know, is that better or worse than Walt, who experienced immense character change, but.
For the super worse.
Yeah, it became worse and worse all the time.
Yeah. Although really you could say that Walt was kind of always that person. He just kept it inside. He would say snarky things about his family and everybody he knew, but like on the inside. Mm-hmm. He just ate up all that poison in the belly, and then eventually it became poison outside his belly.
Yeah.
Sad.
I don't know. I see him going to prison.
Tragic.
That's what I see.
Yeah. I don't know if that'll be what actually happens, but I'm with you. I think that would be the most fitting thing, certainly. At the very least, he's done a lot of crime in his life.
Deserves to
be in
prison.
Done many crimes. Yeah. Yep. Doesn't deserve like a death sentence or anything, but certainly he needs to be locked away.
I do feel like that with that scene with the cancer guy, that the special place in hell for people like him, I think that's going to be important. It's not just going to be that he goes to a prison or whatnot. It's going to be something about the way he goes to prison, something about the time he has to serve. Something about it is going to be extra specially grating to him.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know imprisonment to Jimmy would probably be like the end of his life. It'd just be the worst.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look how he, you know, begs and pleads with Chuck to get him off from the Chicago Sunroof stuff. But like, I feel like that's a loaded line from him when he's essentially talking about Jimmy and saying there's a special place in hell for people like you.
Yeah, I think you might be right in that. And especially the thing that might end up getting him caught. Oh, shoot, no. It's part of what gets him caught. One, he was a con man, mm-hmm. from a wanted con man. But also, two, he was scamming a dude with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
That alone is not going to look great in the court of public opinion, if you will.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think what would qualify as a special hell for Saul Goodman, for Jimmy McGill. It would be to be disliked by everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? His reputation ruined again. But his reputation's already been ruined. I felt like he was in a special hell as Gene.
Yeah. He was kind of, it was like purgatory for him. I think that might be a good analogy for him and Kim. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the proper grammar is there, but they're both in purgatory.
Himmy and Kimmy.
They've both been living their own special little purgatories, so if she's out of hers one way or the other, then yeah, he needs to be out of his.
Yeah, but he's got to go to a special bad place.
Yeah. What would be an actual bad place for him? Good question.
It would be somewhere where he's hated by everybody. So.
And you can't drink anymore.
Yeah, sure.
No more Rusty.
All he has is Drambuie.
Thumbtacks
or
whatever.
No scotch.
Drambuie.
Yeah, no lemon juice. I don't know. We'll see you next week. It's not that far off.
Yeah.
But we have some feedback to do.
All right.
How about we get to that?
Let's do it.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, I want to start off before we do this. I got an email from a website that does auctions of memorabilia. And I thought this was kind of cool, so I just want to talk about it. We're not getting paid or anything to say it, but they're doing a Better Call Saul auction off auction pretty soon. They just announced it. They're auctioning off like Better Call Saul costumes and props and other memorabilia. There's like Chuck's journal and space blanket is one of the lots.
Oh boy.
There's Gus's Los Pollos uniform his cell phone.
Wow.
There's Hector's. It's Hector's bell, but it's
really
it's the backup bell. It's not the one that was used on like on screen, but it's one from the production.
Okay, that's still pretty cool.
There's the world's second best lawyer mug, minus the bullet hole.
Oh, I love it.
And my favorite, the Zaffiro Añejo bottle with the stopper.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't know. Those are just the featured ones. There are probably going to be a lot more other lots up for auction. If you're interested in that, a portion of the profits do go to a local Albuquerque charities. So
yeah, that's
kind of cool too. Begins August 18th, and you can go to propstore.com/bettercallsaul to get more info on that.
Shoo, happy bidding.
Yeah.
If you get something, tell us about it, please.
Yeah, that'd be cool. We'll probably be done with this podcast by then, though.
The 18th but you can still...
8 days from now, and maybe we'll have a wrap-up podcast. I'm not certain on that yet.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move into the actual feedback here, some of the stuff from last week, too. And I apologize to everybody because I had to make some brutal cuts this week. Boy.
Brutal cuts.
Yeah, people were loving this episode, and so there was a lot of feedback that came in. So if I don't read yours, I apologize, but let's get to it. Susan says, I just want to drop you a line for a correction, and this is a mea culpa for me. In regard to the montage song in Better Call Saul Episode 11, Season 6, you mentioned they had to lengthen the song for the montage. However, if you go back and listen to the Insider podcast, they actually didn't have to alter that song. They said, in fact, this was the one that worked out. Then they gave examples of other instances in which they did have to lengthen songs and how difficult that was to do. I enjoy your podcast every week, but I just couldn't let that factoid go. Yeah, thank you. I apparently misheard that. Oops. Along with another fact from it that, mea culpa. Yeah, I messed up. So who knows? Correction. Maybe in retrospect, that episode is better. I might need to give it a chance. Here's what I will say about Better Call Saul. I think the whole show is better in retrospect. I think a binge watch of this show
is
twice as good
as
a week to week watch.
Definitely. You get your answers a lot more quickly.
And the parts that seem slow don't seem as egregious because I don't have to wait seven more days
to get
the continuation of that story, right?
Yeah.
Like I can watch in 3 hours this arc of Gene, whereas I had to wait 3 weeks to do it.
Yeah.
So
I agree with that.
I don't know that I will. I will probably actually feel much better about the episode when I watch it again just because I'm binging it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Steve, and actually a lot of other people wrote in to talk about the flashbacks to Breaking Bad from last week.
Yeah.
And we were asking, you know, specifically what the need, I guess, of those flashbacks, especially the one with Saul walking into the school at the end of the episode were. And Steve says, I don't think it's purely there to connect the dot. I think the writers are trying to compare Gene's choice of going to the house with Saul's choice of approaching Walt to get in on his meth enterprise. There's an argument to say all of the flashbacks in this episode had a similar purpose. The episode is called Breaking Bad because it shows the times in which Saul breaks bad in the original series and again as Gene. Gene is repeating his old mistakes and doesn't seem to have learned from them. These mistakes always seem to be triggered by a confrontation with or concerning Kim. And I think you're right. I agree with that. makes a lot of sense. But I got all that from the scene with Mike and Saul in his office.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I didn't feel like I needed the reinforcement of that theme through the other, like, multiple flashbacks.
Yeah, I still agree with you on that one. That point was not lost to me. That parallel was not lost to me at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's in the Ding Dang title, so.
Right. And we did talk about
like
it.
I said, yeah, I thought we did, but.
Like, Saul wanted in on this because he's greedy.
Yeah.
You know?
But it is nice that we have greater context now with this episode. We know that the mm-hmm. official divorce was also happening around this time.
True.
And that's when he decided, fuck it, let's get involved with this deeper shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't too long before this. I think this divorce paper signing scene happens before that scene, right? With Mike in his office? Going to Walt's high school?
I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I think that he had the papers for longer than...
Gotcha.
...than just that scene. Because mm-hmm. that's, you know, you have, like, a certain amount of time to respond, I think, whenever you mm-hmm. get that kind of... When you're served those kind of papers.
Yeah. No, so, I know people who've been through divorces, and it takes a while.
Yeah,
typically,
right.
Especially if it's contentious, although this one didn't seem to be. Kim didn't want anything out of this.
No.
She just wanted it to be over.
Yeah.
All right. Anonymous writes in. Says, what I wanted to ask about is something I've always wondered ever since Breaking Bad. How much do people working for drug kingpins make in this universe? They never really show how much Mike, Tyrus, or any of their other cohorts actually bring home. This isn't something I want in my Google history, but have long been curious about. Well, I didn't put it in my Google history either.
Me either.
And he says, if the Bald Move Empire offers a similar and competitive pay structure, I'm available for hire. Just so you know. So I calibrate after Better Call Saul, I calibrate off of Nacho's house.
I was thinking that is the exact example I was thinking of. Cool. Yeah, it was Nacho's house.
He's got a pretty nice house.
He's got a pretty nice house. He's got a pretty nice car. He's got pretty nice shit in his house.
Yeah.
He wears nice clothes.
He probably at least gets his drugs wholesale, so you can't really count the cost of drugs. But
yeah. True. Yeah, so a fair amount. Mm-hmm. Definitely more than either of us are making.
Yeah.
Here.
I mean,
podcast.
Jesse's wearing 13, potentially 13 or more $100 Versace.
Yeah, and he's not even
hoodies, and he's low
big
level.
Time. Yeah, he's nowhere near Nacho.
No, he's not a part of the cartel. My God.
Yeah.
No, I bet guys like Mike, Tyrus, Victor, all of them are making plenty of money.
A ton of money. They're just smart enough to not be super flashy about it. Like, Mike is just putting all the money into Kaylee's school fund, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
Trust fund.
And that's the thing that was like, there's a lot of money coming Mike's way that probably wouldn't come the way of them. And I, mm-hmm. I also think of like what Gus offered Walt to cook for him.
For 3 months.
It was like $70 million, wasn't it? Wasn't it like an insane amount of money?
It wasn't that much, but it was $5 million, I think.
Yeah, $70 million was the amount that he had stored up in his money shed.
Yeah.
By the end. Okay. It was an insane amount of money for a few months, right? So
for
if
just
you say
a few months, yeah.
And I know, like, you pay your cooks well.
Mm-hmm.
You want to pay them especially well.
But you also take into account that one of them is like a fucking high school chemistry teacher. Uh-huh. So it's probably not used to a lot of money, so you can probably lowball him a little bit.
Sure. I mean, when you calculate how much, because people did that math on how much money Gus would have earned from that deal,
right.
It was hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think Walt did that math. Also,
he might have. Yeah.
Yeah, he was. That was part of the whole thing of trying to get Jesse and Mike on his side. It was like, oh, you're not. Mm-hmm. We're not getting even a fraction of what this guy's making. What the hell? Because he is a greedy fuck.
Right. Yeah, you're also not exposing your ass to as much risk.
Right.
You didn't have Lalo Salamanca sneaking in your pipes. Your sewer pipes.
Nope, not going to say that.
Okay.
Lalo Salamanca is welcome in my sewer pipes. cut it out. Cut it out.
Never.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so I assume they're making pretty good money.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Reginald says, for purely selfish reasons, I was relieved to see Gene be so determined to steal the identity of his Mark, who has cancer in Breaking Bad, the episode Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same reason I needed to see that scene in Fun and Games where Kim mercilessly crushes the spirit of Howard's widow, Cheryl.
Yeah.
I want my bad guys to be bad. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's not that I don't want my bad guys to have nuance. Lalo and Gus have so many layers to their personalities, I would definitely watch a prequel featuring either of them. It's just that I want the characters I've turned against to be thoroughly worthy of my scorn. I don't want to be conflicted in my emotions. For instance, because of the way she has acted the last two seasons, I know exactly how I feel about Kim. Hopefully she'll become a better person and find some solace in Florida, but I've emotionally moved on from her. The sympathy and affection I had for her are totally gone. That's why it doesn't hurt when, or it didn't hurt when she left, and frankly, I don't ever need to see her again. Until seeing the episode Breaking Bad, I still had conflicting emotions toward Jimmy. In the past, I've had some warm feelings toward him, but at the start of the series, or no, not but, at the start of the series, I felt sympathy for Jimmy because even though he truly loved his brother and took care of him, Chuck constantly looked down on him and tried to sabotage his career. Later, I thought Jimmy had some redemptive qualities when he repentantly undid the rift that he had caused between Irene and her friends in the episode Lantern. But now, Gene is so off the rails that it wouldn't surprise me if he hits the guy over the head and kills him if the man with cancer wakes up and finds Gene in his house. Well, I'd be happy to know he did not do that. After the episode Breaking Bad, I am not rooting for Jimmy, Saul, Gene in any way. It's Walter White all over again. Okay. To each their own, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I feel more sympathetic toward Kim and less sympathetic toward Jimmy now.
I do too, yeah.
And so I'm kind of with you there. I do think, like, yeah.
I think I'm better prepared now to see the consequences fall upon Gene's head than I was before. I think I was more conflicted about it, but now that I see that, oh, he's not choosing to go the other way when he could. He's choosing to lean completely into the terribleness. So.
Well, like 99% of the way that, like I said, he doesn't kill.
Oh, no, no, no. But I mean, he's leaning into his own personal worst self.
Totally. Yeah.
The lowest he's been before, he's there again.
Right. But I do draw the line at Walter White. I don't think
Jimmy
and Walt are the same.
They're not. They both suck, but they suck in different ways.
Yeah. And Jimmy's line, it's kind of strange that Jimmy's line is killing this old woman. And maybe it's because he's, you know, he did his elder law stint and he just can't bring himself to do that to somebody who reminds him of these people that he loved so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have seen him be pretty remorseless about killing people.
Yeah, like
he suggests
he
just kill Badger.
But he's never the one who does it himself.
Right,
the thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
Because he's too
Walt
squeamish,
didn't kill
probably.
Jane. He just let it happen and he's a monster, you know.
Yeah, that's true, but we haven't seen Jimmy in that same scenario where he could prevent a person from dying and chooses not to. So
sure.
So he untested in that way,
and Walt's killed many more people. I mean, Walt poisons kids to get away with stuff, so
yeah, it's a real piece of shit.
Yeah, so I don't know, I draw a big bright line between the two of them, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm
con man
more...
versus con man versus like psychopath, basically.
Totally. All right. Sean says, hey, just want to say thank you to you and Alexis for being critical of last week's episode. It seems to become taboo for anyone to dare say anything less than perfect about Better Call Saul. I too felt let down after watching it. I love the show, but its worst trait is the overindulgence it can slip into. And that was on full display in episode 11. I didn't need to be hit over the head with the reminder that Saul mentioned Ignacio and Lalo in the desert during Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
I also disliked all these episodes being in black and white. Oh, okay.
Hmm.
Again, the show can be so pretentious and makes itself worse at times because of that. I wouldn't be surprised if the finale includes a montage of all the montages they've done. Now we're thinking alike. All right. Anyway, I do fully enjoy and appreciate Better Call Saul. It's one of the better TV shows I've ever watched. I don't mean to be negative, but there are criticisms to be had, And I'm glad you two aren't afraid to voice them. Looking forward to next week.
Yeah, if you can't be honest about the thing that you like, then do you even actually like it? I don't know.
Yeah, you like some image of a show that you didn't watch.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't watch the perfect show. You watched a show that is like 90% amazing.
Mm-hmm. And has
and 10%
annoying moments. Yeah. Nobody's worshiping anything here, for sure.
Definitely not
putting anything on a pedestal. We are not those kind of people.
Not on Bald Move. Never. All right, Jeff writes in. Jeffy says,
I just wrecked my cab. Do you have any recommendations?
The cops are approaching.
Help. What do I do? Help.
He says this is not his comment, but he saw it on Reddit and thought it was entertaining. Or thought it was something. Better Call Saul will end with Gene defecating through a sunroof and getting caught. Gene goes to jail for giving someone a Chicago sunroof. Jimmy's butt is Gilligan's gun on a mantle. Elegant, simple, profound, poignant.
Just like your email. Yeah. Respect.
I think there's a non-zero chance that'll happen.
I mean, he's kind of already
shit through the sunroof.
Emotionally, yeah, he's emotionally done a Chicago sunroof already. So like,
Chicago sunroofed himself.
Right in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Rose.
Kim Chicago sunroofed his heart on that phone call. He had opened his heart, and it was just waiting there. Little did she know, there was an 8-year-old con man boy sitting in the backseat of that heart. She shit all over it.
She sure did. But also, not her fault. They were dunsky as far as she knew.
All right. Josh H. says, I'm calling bullshit on this whole series. AskJeeves.com dropped the Jeeves and became just Ask.com in February 2006, a full 4.5 years before Marion first gets online during the Gene timeline. They simply must address this plot hole in next week's finale. I can address it right here. I can tell you what the problem is. She accidentally found her way to askjeeves.co.uk because apparently over there across the pond, they added the Jeeves back in 2009 and kept it there until 2016.
Wow. And then took it away again?
So, then I think Ask just...
Oh, okay.
I don't know what ask.com is now, but it's sure. Probably a... shadow of its former self. So maybe she accidentally stumbled onto the UK version of the site. It's the only thing I could think of.
That's a good what's the word for whenever you are trying to make an excuse for somebody? Right? I had it. And
I just call it headcanon when I'm dealing with television. That's my headcanon for this.
Sure. That works. Although if they had said ask.com, I don't know that I would have necessarily gotten the reference, but Ask Jeeves, that took me right back to the 90s childhood.
Yeah. Apparently before 2006, if you're in the US.
Yep.
Anyway, he says, okay, just kidding. As for what to actually expect next week, it seems potentially noteworthy that Kim's new love interest in Florida doesn't seem to be her husband or even live with her. The show could simply be telling us that she doesn't want to commit to the Mayo Man, but could also be setting up a more meaningful reunion with her and Saul in the finale, since doing so wouldn't force her to end a serious relationship. There is so much literal and figurative distance between them, it's hard to see how they could cover that much ground in a single episode, but the romantic in me is hoping for it. But mostly I'm just excited to see how things actually unfold. Me too.
I am also excited. I think that the romantic in me, as far as Kim and Jimmy having any kind of happy ending, I think that died at the beginning of this season pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I kind of stopped hoping for that kind of thing. I stopped allowing myself to hope for that kind of thing. And also, it's not like they deserve it. So.
No. I mean, she doesn't deserve to be with him because he sucks, and he doesn't deserve to be with her because she's better than he is.
Yeah.
I don't know,
because they make each other worse, unfortunately.
They do. Yeah, I mean, Kim's definitely right about that, but also I feel like he makes her worse than she makes him.
Oh, definitely. No, she is a better influence on him than he has ever been on her.
Yeah,
she did not call herself Giselle.
Nope. Not until he started it. Next up is Reginald, who says, it seems as though many have already opined about the significance of playing Escape, which is the Pina Colada song that everybody knows, in the background of the picnic scene of Waterworks. They say that obviously the song is referring to Kim. She wants to escape from Saul and her old life. So there you have it. That's reasonable, but I believe the song relates more so to Saul. Unlike the narrator of the song, Saul knows that the person he is or was in a relationship with is what he really wants. But tragically, like the bard of Escape, Saul doesn't really know his partner. Saul tremendously underestimates Kim's moral fiber. 6 years apparently softened her enough so that when she was challenged by Saul to turn herself in, she was strong enough to practice what she said she was preaching to him. What he said she was preaching to him. In my last email, I said that my mind was made up about Kim and that I didn't need to see her anymore, and I'm changing my stance completely. It was great to see her not only do the right thing by confessing to the authorities and Howard's widow, it was also good to see her show some sorrow for everything when she broke down on the way home.
Yeah, definitely. Even if she plays no part whatsoever in the last episode, this was good for me in that exact same way. It was good to see her being Kim, like the version of Kim that we, I think, came to love the most earlier in the show.
Yeah, and it's ironic that it's an episode where you really don't see that version of her. Mm-hmm. All you see is a broken woman crying, and you're able to, you know, piece together the puzzle of her future, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, what does this mean to her? What is this going to mean for her future? Is this a mental breakdown? Is this despair? Is it healing?
I think it's important to note that she's laughing too. She's not just crying. She's laughing a little bit too, which is what leads me to think that there is some relief there.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I read it as, healing.
Mm-hmm.
Or the start of it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Finally got some freaking Neosporin on that big old gash.
Mm-hmm. All right, Scott E. says, a few points here. Much better episode. Don't think 611 looks any better in hindsight, however. I called Marion nailing him, but apparently so did a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
She should have just gone to the police and outed him there. I don't really buy that she lost track of time looking at Better Call Saul commercials, but they needed it for plot, I guess. I could buy it. It's a pretty big revelation.
It is, and you know he has like 30 of those commercials.
Oh,
so
God.
She's probably just watching. She was on a playlist, a YouTube playlist.
Right? If you thought cats on Roombas were entertaining.
Yeah, watch this comb over dickhead.
Also says, I do think they overdid it in hammering how pathetic Kim's life is now. Skylar's Breaking Bad episode 1 birthday gift is now a runner-up for saddest on-screen sex act. Kim lacks agency to a point where you wonder about the consent behind her relationship with Crokey's guy. Is that like a frog reference?
Does it sound like a frog?
I don't know. She doesn't seem capable of the enthusiastic consent that has rightly become the hallmark of modern consent conceptions. Yeah, I mean, she doesn't.
No,
she's incapable of making a choice. That's the thing about her in this episode.
Yeah, I guess so.
So you're not wrong. I don't think the show is trying to go there for sure, but
I mean, they're doing like puzzles and watching TV after, so obviously everything's basically fine. It's just, she's kind of letting things happen to her more so than making her own decisions.
Mm-hmm. I really liked the scene with Kim and Cheryl. We knew that this was that was Kim's lowest moment, what broke her of her Jimmy addiction. It's great to see her take steps to unwind that, as devastating as it was to watch. I can hear her saying she wanted to make it right, and Mike's ghost responding, you can never do that.
Yeah.
Or that you can never do. Thought a little odd that Cheryl thought Kim would know what would happen next. For one thing, it's up to the prosecutor whether to charge is a pretty basic thing that Cheryl, as a lawyer, right, would get. For another, Kim's explanation about lack of corroboration made no sense. If you sign an affidavit saying you did the crime, they don't need other evidence. That's why cops wear people down to get confessions. I am not a lawyer. We do have several lawyers who listen to this podcast, and if they wanted to chime in about how ironclad this confession would be in court of law, I would love to hear that.
Yeah, that would be super useful. I was curious about that too.
Yeah. And he says, could have done without the young Jesse cameo. Are we supposed to now believe Breaking Bad was all Kim's fault? Gus would have found Walt without Saul. He found him because Gale fell in love with the blue stuff. Gus would have made that connection happen with or without Saul. I think it's honestly more Jimmy's fault than Kim's.
Yeah.
Like when he presses the issue with Mike to go find Heisenberg and tries to bring him to Gus, exactly. I think that's more responsible. Then he'd say, I'm looking forward to the finale, but I'm very concerned where this is going for Kim. And I frankly couldn't care what happens to Gene, Jimmy, Saul. I'm wondering if we get more Kim.
Yeah, I'm on the fence with that too. I like the idea of Saul just going, or Gene, Saul, whatever, just going full lunatic and going to Florida because he has nowhere else to go at this point. But also, how likely is that? I'm not a writer, so I don't know.
Yeah, I'm up for whatever they want to do as long as it is compelling
and satisfying.
Yeah,
in some way.
It can't be an episode long montage. That's the only thing I'm ruling out for now. We'll see how it goes. I don't want to put too much expectations on it because that's the surest way to ruin an episode.
To be disappointed in something. Yeah, is to come in with a bunch of loaded ideas. Exactly.
And sometimes they work out. That works out in the favor of the show. Like with Kim, I had a lot of ideas about what was going to happen and her breaking up with him because they are so bad for each other. Because like they're so good for each other, right? It was kind of the perfect way out that I never saw, and all my own ideas were half as good as that one.
Yeah, same.
And
here.
I was like, God, you blew me away because my ideas were not that.
We're weak.
But other times it can totally sabotage your enjoyment.
Yeah.
Jared writes in and says, Kim and Ray Seahorn are of course amazing, but I'm writing in for one reason and one reason only. On the last episode, when discussing the phone booth scene, Alexis suggested that not hearing the conversation was a letdown, in part because they know we're starved for Kimformation. And Jim didn't even react, not even a half laugh, let alone the standing ovation it deserves. Come on now. Please, let's all take some time to recognize the genius on display here. Kimformation.
I've been known to port a manteau from every now and again.
I missed it. That's why I didn't react. I missed it.
It was too smooth.
It was
My
too
delivery
smooth.
Was too smooth.
Damn.
Well, thank you for that. Appreciate that.
Christopher writes in and says, I noticed some discussion about who is the better person, Walt or Saul. Kind of changed my stance. I always assumed they were the same because I assumed the people who were so sure Jimmy was a better person, partly saying that because it's been so long since we saw Saul doing all the stuff he did in Breaking Bad. Dude helped facilitate multiple murders. He laundered money for very dangerous criminal organizations. He helped plant that poison. We saw so much of nice Jimmy for multiple seasons, it made it hard not to feel for him. With Walt, he started murdering people from episode one. We didn't see him just teaching, minding his own business, and getting an apathetic old fashioned from his wife. Dude was in undies standing over dead bodies episode one.
Yeah.
But as I said, my mind changed. I think if it was Walt, he totally would have murdered Marion.
Yep.
Walt wants to win and succeed to the point of being the devil. There are certain things, at least in the Gene timeline, maybe he won't do. Now, granted, not murdering a sickly old lady is not a massively high bar.
Yeah.
Namely, when it would have involved Jimmy choking her to death with a wire, but it's something. I think Walt not only would kill her, but not be broken up about it. Yes, this is the email I read earlier when I was compiling this stuff, and yes, that very much informed my opinion. So I think I agree with that. Like, that's the fundamental difference, right?
He has a line. That is the difference. Again, extremely low bar to pass, but he does have a line that you can draw, whereas Walt is just his shit.
That's what Breaking Bad is, right? That Breaking Bad is a series of scenes where you are seeing if you've found Walt's line.
Yeah.
And you're constantly, I wouldn't say, some people are probably not constantly surprised that you never found it all the way up to the end.
First time watching it with you, I was constantly surprised. I'm like, wow, really? Wow, okay. And then...
Yeah, like, well, he had to kill this person, you know? It was a guy who was actively trying to kill him.
It was self-defense, and then
yeah.
it becomes not self-defense anymore at some point.
He let Jane die because she was destroying Jesse, and he loves Jesse, and so I understand, but like,
yeah,
eventually he's just
she wasn't destroying Jesse. Jesse is the one who got Jane back on drugs. I think we forget about that sometimes.
Yeah,
because Jesse is always, he always, every time something like really messed up happened in his life, he would go immediately back to the meth. I think that happened at least once, and she was trying to be there for him in the moment, but then
yeah, you know, she took it too far. Addiction, she's an addict. Yeah.
That's how addiction works. Yep.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
So, all right. Brad writes in and says, kudos to Bob Odenkirk's acting for managing to reach Saul's final Pokemon evolution gene. It's a full display of smarm, ego, self-destruction, shameless perversion, and emotional rot. With just a minor emotional shift, he portrays the same jokes lovable Jimmy, soulless but charming Saul, and charmless and evil Gene will make with completely different emotional undertones. I would dare say Gene in this episode is more unlikable than even Walt. Boy, a lot of people going hard at Gene.
Yeah.
At times, Odenkirk channels in Gene the depths of Chuck's grandiosity by suggesting he is smarter than the same feds he just learned had found every single financial asset he had.
Mm-hmm.
While the depravity in this episode is clearly setting up the emotional breakdown and potential come-to-Jesus moment of the real man, Jimmy McGill, I cannot believe how foreign a character I've followed since 2009 felt to me. I was disgusted with him the entire episode. In the finale, I hope Jimmy gets redemption, Saul gets self-awareness, and Gene gets a life sentence. This is why I wish for awards panels, like people who hand out awards, they would get to see entire seasons of shows or entire series. Because you're right, the Gene performance itself does not stand out in any way. It's not an incredibly complex performance on its own, but when it taken in context with all the other aspects of that character, the different versions of that character, it's pretty incredible.
It is. Yeah, he does an amazing job. I do think that Bob Odenkirk was the absolute perfect choice for this role.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if anybody else would be able to pull it off as authentically as he has. Because he can be so sympathetic, but he can also be such a bastard. And to be able to hold both of those truths within yourself, that's some powerful acting.
Yeah. No, I've been super impressed with him the entire time. And, you know, he wins awards and gets a lot of credit, but I think he's doing something incredibly hard. It's different than what Bryan Cranston was doing as
definitely,
Walt. Like, yeah, you can compare the two shows in the same universe, and people obviously do. Bryan Cranston was given a lot more scenery to chew, and boy, he chewed it well. But this is different.
Yeah, but he didn't struggle morally and ethically the way that Jimmy has, the way that Jesse did too. Is another sort of tragic character. I still see Jimmy Saul Gene as a tragic character.
Yeah,
even if a lot of the tragedy like he has brought upon his own head, it's still, there have been moments where he could have been more, he could have been better than he is, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
The stars didn't align.
No, he's definitely tragic. I agree. Like I said last week, Shakespearean levels of tragedy here.
Yeah, totally.
Rinaldi writes in, says, gonna make a case for Kim suffering more than any other character in the Breaking Bad universe, and it's not even close. Mayonnaise. Conversations about mayonnaise. Boring boyfriend who says yep all the time, even in the bedroom. Boring parties with friends who stare at food arrangements all day. Boring coworkers at a boring job where the conversations revolve around mayonnaise. I hate mayonnaise, by the way.
I bet you're going to love the earlier part of this podcast.
Hey, Miracle Whip is not mayonnaise. We could be Miracle Whip buddies, Rinaldi. You and I. We don't have to ever talk about mayonnaise. We can just talk about Miracle Whip.
Disgusting.
Kim's terrified behavior during the phone call reminded me of Kim at 13 years old having to avoid her drunk mom in the car offering her a ride.
Yeah.
Jimmy basically acted like Kim's drunk mom on that phone call. Surprised me that Kim did the opposite of what she did at age 13. At age 42, Kim confessed to the crime instead of celebrating getting away with it. That's an interesting development. Do you think those tears Kim cried are tears of relief or regret? I think they're both. I think she regrets what she's done, and she's processing it now, but she's relieved that she can finally get to a place where she can even begin processing.
She's relieved that she has finally done the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the two things feed off each other. She did the right thing, so she's relieved, but she's also relieved that she did the right thing.
Yeah. He continues here on the Breaking Bad cameos. The RV scene with Walt, Jesse, and Saul was done perfectly, in my opinion, but I wish the Jesse and Kim scene was trimmed down a little. It was a cool cameo, but the execution was sloppy. If I could rewrite the scene when Jesse says, "Thanks for getting combo off, that was pretty slick, yo," Kim should have said a rushed "you're welcome" and run off due to her guilt and remorse. The exposition from Jesse and Emilio's legal problems, Saul's theatrical approach was unnecessary. Kim literally running away from the Breaking Bad era was an interesting visual. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys think Kim is thinking about Chuck's disapproval of Jimmy when she sees Saul's clientele in his office? Probably.
Yeah, maybe. Or just how far a person can fall when they choose to fall.
Yeah. No, it's ridiculous. You said something interesting when we about the visual component of this scene with Jesse and Kim,
mm-hmm.
when we were watching it the second time, how when Jesse is talking, asking Kim, like, is this guy a good lawyer, right? I've seen his commercials on TV, and they pull out to a wide shot so that you can see the frontage of this building.
Yeah, in this strip mall with the Vietnamese restaurant right next door, and this giant arrow and the inflated Liberty, and yeah.
And the neon open sign. It's just all
tacky.
Yeah. All of it says no, he's not to be trusted.
Yeah. At the very least, he is not to be taken seriously at face value.
And his clientele is part of that, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the style of his commercials or just the fact that he's out there with those commercials is what brings in this clientele. Because when they need somebody to go to, they don't know any lawyers, right?
Yeah.
In their life, they're not hanging out with in the places that, like, lawyers hang out, right?
Well, the way
where Howard hangs out, none of these people are going into that fancy restaurant. So
the way his commercials work is he says, "Have you been accused of this thing?
A victim,
come see me." Yeah. But yeah, he puts a spin on it, like, you are the actual victim here.
Mm-hmm.
So come see me. He had a freaking commercial about if parts from an airplane have damaged your property, come see me right after the tragedy of ABQ something. That was the episode, it was ABQ.
Yeah, down over ABQ, 737, down over ABQ.
Yep.
Season 2, Breaking Bad.
Yeah, and he just immediately capitalized on that, mm-hmm. with those commercials. Yeah, he's not above anything.
Yeah. And then finally, Courtney says, "I don't know about you guys, but I find myself pretty frustrated with Kim in these last few episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the trouble they got themselves in, I really liked Kim and Jimmy as a couple, so I was heartbroken when Kim ended things in episode 9. I understand that she felt things went too far once Howard was killed, but I found her reasoning for leaving Jimmy to be kind of messed up. Although Jimmy was doing low-level scams that were mostly harmless, except for what he did to the old ladies, Kim really pushed him into the Saul character and the darker behavior that we know Saul would be okay with in Breaking Bad era. She's the one who pushed the plan to take down Howard, and you can tell at several points that Jimmy was hesitant or uncomfortable with parts of the plan and how Kim was acting. Nevertheless, Jimmy did what Kim wanted. Flash forward to her leaving him, basically saying that they are bad people doing bad things and they hurt people, etc., etc. Then in the most recent episode, she says to Jesse that Jimmy used to be good, but is no longer. Yet for the most part, she made him this way. I just love Jimmy as a character, and I loved him with Kim, so it irks me that she broke his heart and sort of ruined his life because of something she pushed him to do. And on top of it, she's a total hypocrite. She used to be my favorite character, but I have grown to dislike her in season 6. She not only became an asshole, but then punished Jimmy for following suit, making her an even bigger asshole. Am I off base here? What do you guys think?"
I think that's a pretty reasonable judgment. I don't know. I guess maybe that's a problem within myself. Whenever there's a kernel of goodness in somebody, I tend to want to keep looking for that goodness within them.
I think that's an asset.
Hmm.
I think, yeah, I can get you hurt. I don't think that's a character flaw. I think it's a character asset. I think people need to give people benefit of the doubt. and give people second chances. And you know, eventually people can prove to you who they are, and if that person is not a good person,
yeah,
then okay, well, they don't get a third chance. But
I think there's a lot to say here for trauma, and I don't know how well she has actually handled watching her former boss get shot in the head in front of her. I think that messed her up pretty bad.
Poorly.
So yeah, she maybe did blow things up a little bit, and maybe it was her fault that things got to that level. But I still feel a lot of sympathy for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand why she has made some of the choices she has since then.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think that kernel of goodness in Kim that you know is there because you've mm-hmm. seen it. And it's, you know, she got carried away. And the disgusting part of it is Jimmy has gotten carried away with his scams multiple times. I mean, the Chicago Sunroof is the first one that we know of, but like time and time again, we see him going too far with his scams,
mm-hmm.
scamming when he knows he shouldn't. And that leads to bad places, and it's kind of inevitable that it will. But Kim does it like once. Kim gets gung-ho about it one time,
mm-hmm.
and it bites her in the ass so hard that she almost isn't able to recover from it. And like, that seems tragic too.
Yeah.
Like that she just got in too deep in the wrong, I mean, wrong place, wrong time for Howard, wrong place, wrong time for Kim too.
Yeah.
And she was an instigator in that scene, but how many times has Jimmy instigated things?
Yeah. And also, how could she have known that Howard was going to die that night?
She couldn't.
She, for her plan, for all she knew, yeah, she knew Lalo was still alive, but she didn't know that he was going to be coming like straight for them.
And she thought Mike was watching. Yeah,
and she thought Mike was watching. Yeah, she thought everything was basically kosher. So her plan was just that, you know, Howard's reputation would be a little yucky for a minute, tarnished, but then he'd be fine.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah,
which
then
bad,
he could work his way out
bad,
of that, right? Like,
but yeah, not terminal.
No, it would cause him a hardship for like a month or two while mm-hmm. he tried to explain to his clients, I'm not a deranged cokehead.
Right.
Like,
just watch my actions for the next 2 weeks and you'll be able to tell I'm solid.
Right. He could earn his reputation back. The way it turned out, that was impossible.
Yeah.
Because he's gone. He's dead.
And
it turned out way worse than she ever expected, because now mm-hmm. people don't just think he's, you know, some drug abuser. They think that he's killed himself. Like,
yeah.
And I don't know how Howard would feel about that. Like, you know, I think people associate that with weakness, right?
I think Howard,
like, oh,
would
Howard
hate
couldn't
it.
Deal, couldn't handle.
I think Howard would hate it.
I think he would too.
If
yeah.
he, you know, had some way of knowing, because it would be like giving up. And giving up was never something that he did.
You're right. You're right. Like, he worked through his problems.
And he never, yeah, and he didn't. Even on people, he didn't give up on people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't give up on Cheryl, even though she was making him sleep in the guest house instead of just like asking for the divorce and finalizing it. He mm-hmm. kept trying. He didn't really even give up with Jimmy.
No.
Until like the very end there, when shit was
right,
crazy.
Bowling balls were raining down in his house.
Oh, well, yeah. And also like the Sandpiper meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the last straw for
him.
Yeah. But he had to literally go that far mm-hmm. to get Howard to give up on him.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think
it worked out so much worse than
so
she
much
ever
worse.
Expected.
So long story short, yeah, it was kind of fucked up what she did and the way that she blew up their relationship and their lives and everything. But I can also see where it's coming from. So
sure.
Context.
It's like a kid who gets their hand caught in the cookie jar, but it turns out like the cookie jar inside the cookie jar was a nuclear bomb button, and they pressed the button accidentally thinking they were going to grab a cookie and be a little mischievous, right? And then they blew up like, I don't know, an Asian peninsula or something. It's like,
that's a good metaphor.
Well, I didn't realize when I grabbed this cookie and did this kind of bad thing that it would cause a nuclear explosion.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the situation she found herself in.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Do you say, like, the kid is culpable for the nuke going off?
Yeah. To what extent do we hold people accountable for things.
Yeah. And for me, I'm with you. I'm willing to forgive, especially because Kim has not made many mistakes. And
she's trying her best. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say even the fact that she breaks up with Jimmy shows that she's decent. I think Jimmy would have gone along with that relationship for as long as it lasted one way or another.
Yeah.
And whether they hurt people, whether they got people killed, he wouldn't have cared.
Whether they even liked each other by the end of it, he wouldn't have cared as long as he had that thing to keep coming back to, that person who hadn't given up on him yet.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, this is a sacrifice for the Kim's making on the behalf of other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that shows her inherent decentness as well.
Yeah. Also, it means that they can't protect each other anymore legally.
Yeah, true. So, I don't know. I'm still sympathetic to Kim. But that's where we'll leave it this week. We've got one more episode of this show, which is kind of crazy.
Long journey. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been trying to wrap my mind around it. It's like, this isn't the end of the season. This is just like the end.
No, there are very few shows that I've gotten all the way to the end of. Even though I've been doing this for over 12 years now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Breaking Bad, Mad Men. You wouldn't believe it, but the fucking Walking Dead is still going.
Yeah, not for much longer, but it is still going. That'll end this year too.
But yeah, it's always weird to say goodbye to these things because they become a part of your life. And and that's me as a podcaster, but that's also people out there watching. They get into a routine, they get into a habit, they fall in love with these characters.
There's always a little bit of a sense of loss whenever a story ends and you just don't have that anymore. These characters, their journey is over. It is not continuing. And you don't have them, like you said, part of your life anymore.
Yeah.
It is a little weird and painful and awkward.
We did recently did a premium podcast for our Patreon members, Aaron and I.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an off the clock episode where we talked about Harley Quinn, the TV show, and why this season wasn't quite doing it for us. And Aaron said something about the idea of like, will they, won't they, is always like a super compelling idea.
Yeah,
is a super
course.
Compelling plot motivator, plot driver.
Cannot even tell you how many animes.
Oh yeah,
just I mean sitcoms on like that, yeah.
90% of the shows you watch have a will they, won't they in them. And seasons 1 and 2 were all about will they, won't they. Season 3 was about, well, they did.
Mm-hmm.
So now what?
Yeah.
And we're not nearly as enjoying it as much. I feel like that's the feeling you get from the end of a show. Like there's always a will they, won't they for like the plot. What's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? Well, there is no more next. I know all I'm ever going to know about this thing. And it feels somehow diminished because just because it's over.
Just because it's over. Yeah. You don't have that. There is no more expectation. It's just you're closing that back cover of the book and you have to walk away from it. Or you'd be like me. Whenever I find something I really like that doesn't require my eyeballs, I just listen to it over and over again.
Yeah.
I immediately go back to the beginning of the thing. So then I have greater context for the entire show. And I get to better appreciate that journey of those characters from start to finish.
And you can absolutely do that with this show.
You can.
I did it before this season. I watched all of Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
I know you watched Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad.
That was really fun.
I bet. There's still that. There's always a rewatch. But yeah, we'll be back to cover the last episode here in a week. I feel like we should save all this conversation for the finale episode because it's just a lot to talk about.
That's fine. No, we'll have, oh my God, I'm sure we'll have so much more to talk about next week. So
will we?
This
was 2
things.
Hours, so
oof.
I hope not. But we'll see. Hopefully you guys don't mind a 2-hour podcast.
Oops.
Because we'll be back with the 3-hour one next week.
Oh my God.
But until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Alexis.
I'll see you.
Bye.